What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
It's time to wake up with a nice cup of morning roast. Featuring
Fillmore's finest, Monte Hill. The pride of the Excelsior, Joe Butcher Boy Shasky. You're listening to 95.7 The Game, the morning roast.
Oh, baby, oh, baby, oh, baby, oh, baby. Shout out to those watching on YouTube. Brought to you by First NorCal Credit Union. For a low-rate auto loan, apply online or just ask for First NorCal financing at the dealer. The big boss man's in the studio. Hey, boss man, I dare you to activate the YouTube chat. I dare you to do it. I dare you to do it today. So I want to hear from the Sam Darnold truthers. Now, I'll be the person to say it was his first playoff game. It was his first postseason game, and things are a little different when you haven't tasted the postseason before. Now, on the flip side, you can say Jaden Daniels never played in the postseason, and he was cool as a cucumber yesterday or Sunday night against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So, Sam Darnold looked awful. The Warriors looked awful. We're going to get back into the Warriors in a little bit. 888-957-9570, because we are at an inflection point. I believe it was rock bottom. I asked Festus and Mully. I said, you know, to me it feels like rock bottom. They both said this is rock bottom for the season. They're first. One game under 500. They haven't been under 500 all season long. Buddy can't find, he can't buy a basket right now. Steph is struggling, even though he had 26-77 and moved up the leaderboard in terms of assist and points scored in NBA history. He surpassed Allen Iverson yesterday. But we need answers. We have a lot of questions without the answers. And when it comes to the 49ers, Sam Darnold, what'd you think, Niner fans? Basically, it was a big game for Niner fans watching Sam Darnold last night down in Glendale, Arizona. And it did not go his way. He got sacked 9 times, didn't have much of a run game. And at times, it looked like he was seeing ghosts, throwing behind guys, in front of guys, holding on to the ball. Sam Darnold saved this worse for last the last 2 weeks of the season.
Almost 90 yards in sacks, you know, negative losses. Yeah, he played terrible. Obviously played terrible the week prior. And I call that a playoff game, even though it's not. It's kind of like the Jimmy Garoppolo week 17 against Seattle in 2019. Like, it is a playoff game because of how important it is for seeding and getting the bye and all that stuff.
Think about that.
But it's not a quote-unquote playoff game statistically.
Think about how quickly things change. They beat Detroit, they're the number one seed. They're chilling, and they're getting home games at U.S. Bank Stadium. And that's why Jimmy does deserve credit. I'm glad you brought up the 2019 game in Seattle, because that was a game for the number one seed in a division against the 12s. And the Niners hadn't won in Seattle since 2011 before that night. For Jimmy Garoppolo, what did he go? 18-22, 285 in a touchdown pass.
Same thing as that. What I think it was week 18 against the LA Rams in LA, which was like a win and get in.
Win and get in, yep.
Yeah, you know, win and get in scenario. So, you know, there are games that are elevated, and that was clearly an elevated game for Sam Darnold. Look,
And they surrendered yesterday. The Vikings, like, quit.
Well,
they kind of quit.
I think Kevin O'Connell, I'm not to get all deep on Kevin O'Connell, you know, he made a big deal about, hey, you know, you don't want to give me a contract extension. Teams will trade for me. It's like, hey, bro, you did lose to Daniel Jones and the New York Giants in the playoffs a couple years ago when you won the division with the Minnesota Vikings. And he's a good coach. He's a really good coach. He got undressed yesterday by McVay and Shula. And Sam Darnold, he took a huge step back. But this is also how we do some of the evaluations in the sport, right? Like, I think about a long time. Like, let's say Brock doesn't make that comeback against the Green Bay Packers. You know, how does that whole season feel a lot different, right? So things happen in the playoffs, and you can't look at someone the same. And it doesn't mean they can't rebound from it. It doesn't take away from his magical season, because a lot of people are going to say he's a fraud. No, he had a great year. He did. It just ended horrifically for him. And then what is the domino effect for him financially? If I'm Minnesota, I'm probably still franchise tagging him. $41 million guaranteed, which is going to be the number.
Ooh.
Well, it's better than signing a multi-year deal because I look at
why not just ride with J.J. McCarthy?
The chances that you are handing the reins over to someone who will have a better season than 4,300 passing yards and 35 touchdowns is pretty slim.
I don't know. I mean,
this is a guy who handed the ball off a lot at Michigan.
I would have rather handed the ball off a lot in Minnesota as well. Play action pass in Justin Jefferson, $41 million for Sam Darnold. Now, I could be a cynic here, and I will be. Since the bye week, I'm looking at Minnesota's schedule. Since the bye week, and we should have saw this coming. Honestly, we should have saw this coming. They lose to Detroit at home. They go to L.A. on a short week, Thursday Night Football. They lose it to the Rams. They got smoked by the Rams in that game. And then they beat Indianapolis by 8. They were hanging out for dear life. Indianapolis, not a playoff team, not a good football team whatsoever. They go to Jacksonville and win 12-7. Well, Jacksonville's blown everybody out. We have questions on Trevor Lawrence. Not a good football team. They won 12-7. Then they struggled at Tennessee. Not a playoff team. Not a good team. Matter of fact, they're so bad they have the number one overall draft pick. They're just going to go to Chicago, who is not a good football team. But I'll grant it, division games are different. They survived in overtime in that one. They beat Arizona by a point. Arizona did not make the playoffs. They were a mediocre team. They beat the Falcons and put it on the Falcons, but we know the Falcons didn't make the playoffs. They beat the Bears again. They beat them up pretty good. At Seattle, they beat Seattle. Okay, good win. That's a solid win at Seattle. I'll give them that. And then they beat Green Bay and then lose at Detroit, and they got undressed by Detroit. Fact is, basically what I'm trying to say is they didn't have the toughest schedule. And they weren't all that impressive if we really look at it closely down the stretch here. Now, they won a lot of games, and they get credit for that. They get credit for taking care of business. There's no doubt about that. But in a way, we should have saw this coming with Sam Darnold. We were fooled and bamboozled. So I want to hear from the Uncle Genes. I want to hear from all the Sam Darnold truthers about Sam Darnold. Now, after watching last night, would you still make a move for Sam Darnold? And it's okay if you would. I'm not here to debunk it. If you want to roll with Sam Darnold, so be it. But I do feel a lot better about Brock Purdy now after watching these playoffs over the first round of over the weekend.
What is it? What is it about Brock Purdy? Why do you feel better about
him? I'm going to be in a position to win a lot of football games if my team is healthy, which is a tough ask in the NFL. But I know Brock Purdy's not going to cower in a moment. If anything, he's risen when a moment gets tight. When adversity hits, he's risen above it over and over and over again. I have a proven commodity in Brock Purdy. So I feel a lot better about Brock Purdy than I do, say, 3 weeks ago.
I don't know. The way I view Brock is independent of whatever Sam Darnold was doing. I don't think that they're correlated. I get why people do that. We all do that. Like, we compare and contrast things.
No, that's what we're doing because Darnold was in camp last year, and he was on the team.
Yeah, but Darnold had a great year, and he was way better this year than I had ever envisioned. And yeah, he had two horrible games at the end of the year, and that's going to stick in everybody's craw. But he had a magical season, and I got to give the guy credit. Now, everyone's going to take a dump on him today, and I get it. Believe me, I freaking get it. You know, and it makes a lot of sense, especially when you're thinking about what should they do, Minnesota. The Rams just kicked their butt yesterday. They destroyed them. They destroyed Kevin O'Connell. I was super impressed with McVay. That guy is just so good.
Yeah, but players got to play, too, and you got to execute. We can't just say, hey, this is all on the coach. He doesn't go out there and tackle. He doesn't blitz. He doesn't miss tackles. He doesn't, shoot the wrong gap. He doesn't drop passes. He doesn't run the wrong route. He doesn't throw the wrong pass. Like, I hear you on Kevin O'Connell, and they went out weak yesterday in Glendale, Arizona. The Vikings went out weak.
I mean, they did a great job on what they – and I'm watching the Peyton and Eli broadcast, and the coverages that they were using on Justin Jefferson, Eli's like, yeah, I've never seen that before. Basically, they were running a cover two, right. And then they threw another linebacker into the area. Great. He's like, it's like a double cover two. It was very interesting. And to hear two former quarterbacks, because I switched off Troy Aikman after I heard his voice for like, I don't know, 5 minutes. I was like, I can't do this. Oh, I'll go to Peyton and Eli. And it was just really fascinating to see. And yes, the pass rush absolutely got to Sam Darnold's dome and his psyche. He was holding the ball too long. He was running into sacks. He was high and airmailing it. He was telegraphing passes. Then they brought in Jared Allen, who played for the Vikings for a while, and he's really invested in the Vikings. And he was like, dude, this guy was really good all year. He don't look like he's it right now. And sometimes that happens. You get shell-shocked in a playoff game, and you're done. And it felt like he was done. And it felt like Kevin O'Connell was done. And then he was asking, why are they not going no huddle? What is the coach doing here? It was really interesting to hear a former player talk the way us fans do about the game. Like, come on, you got to go no huddle here. There's 6 minutes to go in the third quarter.
Well, he's 2 weeks in a row where Darnold looked like he held on to the ball too long and couldn't do anything. As Aaron Glenn and the Vikings just said, we're going to blitz and play man defense and get your corner, get your wide receivers, and we're going to come after you. And Darnold was unsure of himself last week. Baldy had the highlights. You know, Jordan Addison in the flat, grip it and rip it, dude. Grip it and rip it. He wouldn't do that. He was very reluctant to do that. So I don't know how much money he cost himself. We have
a lot, Aikman, I think.
Well, here's what Troy.
Don't you?
Let me see. You would think is Troy Aikman. That sounds that up. Lovin, when you get a chance, I know it's in our thread. This Troy Aikman sound on Sam Darnold and how maybe he cost himself some money. We'll go to that in a second. But first, let's get BPA on the airwaves as you look for that. BPA, what's happening, man? You're on the Border Ross here on 95.7 The Game.
Yo, what's going on?
Yo, what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, Brock's going to be the quarterback for the Niners next year. If there was any doubt, it's pretty cleared up now. He'll have a high total contract value, but hopefully they can structure it in a way that's, you know, not over the top on guaranteed money, as David Lombardi has said. I don't think Darnold will be re-signed by the Vikings. They have J.J. McCarthy. They invested a first-round pick on him, and they have him on a cheap rookie deal for 3 years. And so J.J. will be the starter there, and they already got Daniel Jones there to be his backup. So Darnold will be someplace else, probably sign like a 2-year, 30 or $40 million total contract value deal with, I don't know, the Titans or someone? Maybe the Patriots? No, not the Patriots, but, you know.
Like, New York.
He'll have a job. And he'll
want to go back to New York?
Well, the only reason I say that is because I think a lot of those teams in the that didn't get one of the top two picks are going to be on the outside looking in. Right. And the rest of the quarterbacks that are in this draft don't feel worthy of a top 10 pick.
No doubt.
But I'm with BBI. I think they might franchise tag him and trade him. I don't know. I don't think they're just going to let him walk.
I don't know. I mean, that would mean somebody's going to pay Darnold. What's the franchise number? 35,
it's 41
40
million guaranteed.
Like 41 million
the estimate no is 41 one, million guaranteed. No one, that hits your books now, and then you'd trade a first-round pick.
Would Cleveland do that?
I think they would just take it. No. They don't have the money.
Cleveland can't.
They can't. They don't have the money. I'm just eliminating teams as I name them. Cleveland can't because their cap is in hell. I get that. But Tennessee, what they do?
No, they're going to take a quarterback.
Exactly. What about Jacksonville? They have Trevor Lawrence.
But this goes back to like the same exercise you're doing now was the one that I was doing regarding the 49ers and Brock Purdy and how they do have some leverage in the sense that there aren't a lot of teams out there that are like the Raiders are an example. I don't know what the Raiders view Sam Darnold. Do they say, hey, we got like, whatever they have, the sixth pick, fifth pick? We're not going to get a quarterback. Is it worthy for us to trade two twos for Sam Darnold and pay him? I don't know.
Ooh.
I know. It's a big risk.
Wait, the caption here, BPA, before we let you go, says, I'm out on Darnold after that playoff performance. So does that mean that you were in on Darnold before the playoff performance?
No, I was not in on Darnold as we need to bring Darnold back to replace Brock. No, I was not. Never was. I'm also not like Brock. You know, I'm not walking around. I'm not like a David Lombardi Brock super fan. You know, like I'm not like, you know, I don't spend 10 hours a day on Twitter trying to, you know, tell everyone Brock is like the second coming of Joe Montana. So I think he's the best option we have.
Yep.
Get him an offensive and get him help on the offensive defensive line, I think would be my take. And let him play. You know, because he's, pretty simple stuff.
David Lombardi started to come up on the show every single day. We should probably get him on if that's the case.
I do think there's this.
He answers his phone first.
There's this snapback, like, and again, like, if we're just being honest, like, Brock had a down year. Okay. Some of these other guys are having down years in the playoffs, and in retrespect, his playoff performances last year look a lot better. But he also had a down year.
He did have a down
year. I still like the guy. I don't want to get rid of him, you know, but he's due a lot of money, and I don't know what that number is. And so all of these things are what we call, like, these are talking points, and it's intriguing. And so, like, I look at someone like Darnold. I wasn't in on Darnold, but I also wasn't out on Darnold. And I said to you, because you asked me during the year, and I think I said multiple times, I kind of want to see how it ends, right? I want to see the end of the movie. Like, I haven't made a snap judgment. Some movies, right away, I could tell, like, Kill Bill, I knew, like, 5 minutes in, wow, this is different. This is, like, totally different. But other movies, like, there's a crescendo and there's a buildup, and I got to kind of see how the ending goes. And, like, Darnold, I wanted to see how it ended. Boy, did it end horrible.
Here's what Baldy thinks. The Vikings let Darnold walk. Here's Baldy.
I don't know what they're going to do now. If they're going to make Sam, my guess is they're going to let Sam go test the market. That's my guess. Let him go test the market and then give the Vikings a chance to match anything that he gets out there if they so desire to do it. That sort of takes Minnesota a little bit off the hook. I mean, Sam wants to be there. I know that. He likes it there. But if you let Sam go test the market, let him go talk to the Giants or whoever it is, 49ers, whoever might be interested, they can kind of figure out what the market is by what teams offer. Maybe he takes a little bit of a haircut to come back and then compete for the job with McCarthy. I don't know, but that's my guess right now.
Would he still flip Brock for Darnold, considering the price points?
The only reason why I said that a couple weeks ago, Bonte, was we were talking about, do you want to give Brock Purdy $60 million? Or yep. Top five money, or is there another option? And at the time, Sam Darnold was 14-2 or 13-2. He was throwing 35 touchdown passes. He looked like a good option at that point. Now, he's been terrible these last two games, no question. Like, off. And if you just based everything off two games, you wouldn't even have a phone call. But he's had five clunkers this year, five that looked like the last few weeks. But he's also won 14 games. They do have a 14-4 record. Now, you can say, all right, they beat up on the Bears, whoever. But he did throw 35 touchdown passes this year, and they did win 14 games. So I get all the fans that want to blast me. I understand. I'm fine.
Baldy's a big boy.
Yesterday's,
he can handle it.
Yesterday's performance from Darnold, I hate doing this to the guy, but it reminded me of Dak Prescott in the sense that, like, you were so bad, you negated all the goodwill of the regular season.
Damn.
Because, like, no, like, I think, damn. Think about how we talk about Dak. Like,
wow.
Obviously, Dak makes a ton of money.
Yeah, no doubt.
But, like, we talk about Dak like he's just this loser who's so garbage. Like, he is Blake Bortles, right? You know what I mean? And it's like, no, he's a good player. Like, if you just take a step back, like, he's a good player. Is he worth $60 million? No, he's not worth $60 million. And here's where it's the hard part with Dak. Like, if it's November, October, September, I know he's going to throw up big numbers. The second the calendar gets to January, I have zero faith in him. And if, in fact, I think he is going to be one of the main reasons your team loses. And I think that, like, that's how that performance stuck with me last night with Darnold.
You know, you always talk about the housing market and prices.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Where the housing market is at. Well, you could look at the quarterback market the same way. The quarterback market is what it is. The going rate for a good quarterback is the price that it's at right now. $40 to $50 to $60 million a year. It just is what it is. If you want to have a good
quarterback.
That's
if you want to get in the game.
So if you want to get in the game and
compete.
You
could choose not to get in the game.
You could choose not to get in the game and not have a quarterback at all.
Or no. You could also draft, right? That's what other teams do. So, like,
they draft,
for example,
but it's
Washington
hard to hit.
Could have paid for a quarterback on the open market, right? Or they could have drafted one,
But think about how hard it is to draft one and hit.
It's really hard.
Buffalo, after Jim Kelly, for years, whether it was Rob Johnson for 5 years, $25 million, Doug Flutie, J.P. Lossman, E.J. Manuel, you name it, they couldn't find a quarterback. And finally, they stumbled onto Josh Allen. But think about how long that took.
They didn't stumble. They traded multiple times in the first to move up to 7, I believe.
To draft him. But think about that. Think about how long it took them to hit.
Yeah, no doubt.
On a quarterback. Drafting, no matter what. It's hard. We say it's so easy. Like, hey, draft and develop. Washington Commanders. Think about how long it's taken them to draft, develop, sign, whatever the case may be. They finally feel like they had one. And they had a lightning in a bottle with RG3 and lightning in a bottle with Kirk Cousins. But really, it's been a lot of nothing for many, many years since they last won a Super Bowl with Mark Rippon and Joe Gibbs. They've gone through a litany of quarterbacks. It is hard finding quarterbacks. So even when you get a good one, a serviceable one that could at least help you win a playoff game or two, I think the Niner fans, I think, realize they're in a better position than they thought they were in 3 weeks ago. Brock Purdy's not the worst thing in the world. When he's on, he's a top 7 quarterback in this league. When he's off, yeah, sure, it's going to look a little hairy. But when he's off, you also got to look at what's around him. And what's around him is also as equally important. Sam Darnold's offensive line let him down. There's no doubt about that. When you don't have a good offensive line, you're going to struggle. But at the times you have an opportunity to make a play, you better be damn sure you make that play. And too many times last night, Sam Darnold was not able to make that play.
Sure. The interesting one about the quarterback, so I think you and I just disagree on this. And like, if you're in the Tua zone, and I think Purdy's better than Tua, but I'm saying, like, for example, Miami, the second they signed Tua, I'm like, no, you're not going to win anything of significance. And look, you're going to be a 9-win team, it feels like, if Tua stays healthy. 9, 10, maybe you win 11, you know? But I don't think you have any chance of winning a Super Bowl. And I think he's solid. He's clearly better than all their backups and whatnot. And they're almost like non-functional when exactly. You move off of Tua. But that doesn't mean that I pay him market rate. Like, see, to me, there should be...
But the alternative is having a backup who can't function in your offense.
No, the and alternative is the making alternative a different
is
decision.
Is winning 4 games a season. It feels that easy with quarterbacks. This is why teams pay these quarterbacks. Because there's not a lot of good quarterbacks out there. I think we all think that there's 80 living quarterbacks walking around that is good, that you could plug and play and just be solid. No, it's very hard to play quarterback in this league, and there's not too many good ones. So when you do pay somebody and you identify Tua saying, well, when Tua's right, he can lead this league in completion percentage. He can throw for the most yards in this league. My offense can function at a high level and average nearly 30 points a game.
They've never won a game in January.
Okay, though. They haven't won a game in January yet.
Is it about being like... solid, or is it about winning it all?
Well, you got to try to win it all. Everybody's trying to win it all. You don't think the Dolphins are trying to win it all?
I guess my thing is, when you sign Dak to the price point he's making, I think you are literally crossing yourself off as a team that can win it all.
Well, that's
because I know how difficult it is to surround that guy with talent, with the given the restrictions of the finances. That's the way I view team building.
Yeah, but the alternative is not paying for the quarterback, trying to continue to flip the quarterback and develop and find guys on the cheap.
The alternative is right with
risk. And losing.
Yes.
And losing a lot of football games. And nobody wants to lose a lot of football games. Don't you want to win? Don't you want to be in a position to win? I know with Brock Purdy, he may not be the greatest thrower of the football of all time. He may not be able to hit the deep route consistently. But damn it, with Brock Purdy, I've seen them go to an NFC Championship game and a Super Bowl in back-to-back seasons with Brock Purdy. I know I can win a lot of football games and compete at the highest of levels with Brock Purdy at quarterback. Even though he's not the greatest one out there, I know I could be in the mix with Brock Purdy. Now, the money's going to be different, right? But I truly believe this next contract is going to be a lot more team-friendly than we think. And I think we're assuming that it's just going to cripple the 49ers. I think Parag Marate is going to do a good job with this quarterback.
So, like, you're saying that you think that Purdy can win. I don't – and it's the same way like I view Darnold. Like, I don't – I'm not saying that I don't think he can win it. I want to see more, right, before I commit. And unfortunately, we don't get the opportunity to see that because you feel like you have to make a decision now. But I'm always hesitant to marry anyone long term. I just am. We're in this big rush to give everyone the bag and jump to the front of the line.
Nobody's in a rush for it. I think sports culture is not in a rush to play.
Well, Ayuk was under contract for another year and he had to get paid. But Christian McCaffrey was under contract for another year and he had to get paid.
That's the time to get extended. That's the way this league works.
No, I know, but I guess knowing all the stuff.
Don't forget about Nick Bosa. He had a year left and he wanted to get paid too. And trade. That's the way business works, Sasky. Where you been?
And what I'm saying is it hasn't been good business. That's what I'm saying. Out. And so if I can, I'm going to try to push it off and suppress it as long as I can.
So is Brock Purdy won the benefit of the doubt? You think that he's going to regress even worse than he was played this year? And even this year wasn't as bad as I think we all make it out to seem?
He got hurt and they went 6-11 and he underperformed. And I like the guy. No, I'm not in a big rush to give him $60 million or whatever it is guaranteed per season. So, no, I'm a little more pragmatic about this. I think this is a big decision. I do. And I think every million you can save does matter.
So if you don't pay him $60 million, what is the other option?
The other option is you go out and you see what your other options are. Is it Aaron Rodgers? Is it Sam Darnold? Like, those aren't enticing options to me. But it's not like you're just, oh, we stop playing football, we can find somebody. You know, who would have thought that the Green Bay Packers would actually hit on the Jordan Love thing, even though it was a little down?
Well, he sat for 4 years, and I don't think anybody's high on Jordan Love right now.
They went to the playoffs 2 years in a row.
They lost in the divisional round, and they got smoked in the wild card round. Is that the goal? The Packers were Super Bowl contenders before the season. Everybody had them hyped to go to the Super Bowl championship.
We're afraid to say, like, he's good, but I'm not sure he's that great.
Nobody's afraid to say that. I've said that over and over that he's not great. When he's on, though, he's a top 7 quarterback. Is he not? I think we're afraid to just give him his flowers. I think that's what's happening around these parts. We're afraid to give him his flowers, and we have PTSD from Jimmy Garoppolo. He's better than Jimmy Garoppolo, folks. He's better than Jimmy G.
This year his stats were identical to 2021.
He's better than Jimmy. You know the context of everything,
right? Do you look at them?
Well, 2021, Jimmy went to the NFC Championship game. How many guys did he have healthy? He had Brandon Ayuk. He had Deebo Samuel. You had George Kittle. You see what happened this year with this team? Offensive line was in flux. Wide receiver position was in shambles. Guys can't get off press, man.
Break, Doug.
I'm not making excuses for Brock, but there's a lot baked into the equation. All right, more coming up here. 888-957-9570. Dalton Johnson coming up at 920. What the hell do you do with the Golden State Warriors as they lose to their lowly Toronto Raptors? What do you do with the Dubs? 888-957-9570. We'll put Dub Nation on the clock. You're Mike Dunleavy. What do you do with this roster right now? That's all coming up. Again, brought to you by In at the Tides. The Bayview Restaurant is delighted to announce the return of their popular winemaker dinner series, and I love it. Five evenings of exquisite wines from the best local vineyards, expertly paired with a delicious four-course menu. Reserve your spot right now at inatthetides.com.
Anderson waits for Curry. Off the screen, takes the three on the way. Got it! Curry knocks it down. He has passed Allen Iverson on the all-time scoring list and has given the Warriors a 96-93 lead.
The Morning Roast is live on YouTube right now. Take it away, Bonte.
All right, Steph. Boy, tough one last night. Lost to the Raptors. 104-101. Remember, the Raptors entered the game losing 16 of their previous 17 games. They just picked up their ninth win of the season. Eight of them come home, though. Scotiabank Arena up in Toronto. Warriors got scored in paint 50-26. That's right. Points in the paint. Raptors 50. Warriors 26. The Warriors go 60-46 from three. Half their shots came from the three-point line as they shot 34.5%. They've been one of the worst shooting teams in the NBA since December 1st. So at 888-957-9570, Dub Nation / Roasters, what would you like to see the Warriors do? Because this certainly feels like rock bottom. Now, they have one more game left on this road trip, and there are three games behind the Clippers in the loss column for the sixth and final spot in the Western Conference. Obviously, the play-in tournament is 7-10, but we don't want to see that. We want to see a best-of-seven series out here in the Bay Area. But what should the Warriors do? This feels like rock bottom. Is it sell off all the parts? Is it start to make a play for the future? Is it stand pat? What do you do right now if you're Mike Dunleavy and Joe Lacob? What do you do? Trade deadline's West Coast time, 12 p.m., high noon, February 6th. You have some decisions to make. Kuminga's a restricted free agent. Looney's an unrestricted free agent. Gary Payton II, free agent. Dennis Schroeder, free agent. What are you going to do, Dub Nation? What would you like to see the Warriors do? What would you like to see them do, Shasky?
Make a decision, poop or get off the pot, as we like to say back in the day. And to me, it's pretty straightforward. Either you're making one of these wild, reckless trades, which mortgages things, which is fine, or you just bottom out and you just tank. It's just I need one or the other. Like, let me know what direction you're in. Because this is, I think, driving everyone crazy. It's driving the coach crazy. It's driving the star player crazy. It's driving the fan base crazy. A directionless, rudderless team out into the ocean, just kind of sailing away, you know, with no compass and no idea of where they're going. Like, it's tough to watch. Like, this has been one of the ugliest teams I've ever seen watch. I mean, 2019-2020 is pretty bad. Am I wrong? Like, Kai Bowman and Eric Paschal, because I remember doing all those postgame shows.
I went to every
single
game.
They were horrible. But we only had so many of those games because of COVID. What was it, 15-50? What were they that year?
Yeah, 15-50.
So we were lucky. Year. We were lucky. It could have been worse.
I went to every single one of those games, man.
Bad. The team was bad. This team is bad, and it's not bad because of, like, randomness in the sense of, like, everyone's hurt. No, this one's just bad.
You know, they started 12-3. And I didn't think they were a 12-3 team. I thought they were going to be decent, right? I thought that,
yeah,
okay,
12-3.
But I was like, wow, Buddy, I've never seen Buddy do this. Is this sustainable? We had a conversation. I remember you brought this up on the air where we had a conversation. And I basically was like, look, let's just chill for a second and see where this goes after the 12-3 start. They play some teams that weren't at full strength. Teams are going to start to pick up their slack and start to come together a little bit. December's going to happen with that tough schedule. And then you look over to nine games in which they played 8 of 9 at home at Chase Center. And the one game they played on the road was in L.A. at the Intuit Dome. And they went 3-6. They went 3-6 during that stretch. A lot of home games there, and they went 3-6. Losing to Indiana, who was on the back end of a back-to-back. Losing to Miami, who was on the back end of a back-to-back after playing a double OT game in Sacramento. And so, as Steph Curry said a couple weeks ago, as the kids say, we're mid. Yes, they're mid. They're mid right now. The problem is, when you shoot all these threes, you look at the way they play offense. They have one of the worst offenses in the NBA. They're 21st when it comes to offensive rating. And you look at the lineup combinations, Steve Kerr searching for answers. Hell, he's at 22 different starting lineups searching for answers here at Shasky. But you have nobody, even Steph, who could still get his 22 and 7 and 7, but they're having a difficult time individually beating their man off the dribble and breaking down the defense and creating open looks for others. They just don't have it. They're small. They're slow. They're not athletic. They're one of the least athletic teams in the league. And they're the worst free throw shooting team in the league, which is a deadly combination if you don't want to win basketball games in this league.
But wouldn't you agree that had they, let's say they had retained Klay Thompson, if you were doing a farewell tour and we're just like, just gonna have to do it. Like, okay, like I get what you're doing. You're doing the farewell tour thing, okay? And we're just going down with the ship, which I, you know, there's a case to be made for that. But you let Klay go. And so now it's like, all right, what are we doing with Draymond? Right? Like, what are we doing with
Draymond? Well, a lot of people, we asked at the summit, we asked on these airways, if you had to make a choice, this is last season, who do you keep, Draymond or Klay? And a lot of people called in and said, you keep Draymond because Klay's washed. That was, we took the calls. You know me and my elephant memory, I remember everything. I remember what was going on around these parts, and I remember the first part of the season when I ran into the old boy at the Bruce Mahoney game, and he knows exactly who he is. Bonte, we got through. And we know exactly what whoever called the show the day after the Portland game to start the season. If we had Klay, we lose that game. I'm like, what is the Portland Trailblazers crying out loud? And everybody went goo-goo gaga. And everybody wants to trade everybody. So, like, let's be careful what we wish for. Here's the deal this league.
What do you mean by that?
What I mean by that is you need shooting in this league and you need spacing. Uh-huh. And the Warriors have neither. They don't have shooting. They don't have spacing.
Well, I also don't think that like they have defense. Like their defense might be good.
Their defense is ranked in the top 10.
I don't care what the ranking is.
I'm just telling you what they are.
Because the fourth quarter defense. Then why is Boucher destroying them?
Boucher's wide open on the three-point line. He can shoot it. But I agree. I don't buy into rankings.
Yeah, okay.
But
okay.
My point is, though, we get so caught up in defense. This is an offensive-driven league.
Okay.
You need to go get buckets.
No, I agree.
The biggest misnomer during the KD years was like, our defense is so great. No. You know what was great? Was that they could be down 10, and boom, 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 they go on a 15-0 run. And all of a sudden, that opposing team goes on offense, and they're like, oh, boy, if we don't make a basket, we could be down 8. They would wilt under the pressure, knowing that there's Klay, there's KD, there's Steph, and there's Iguodala coming on them baseline, dunking all over your head. The offense puts so much pressure on opposing defenses and opposing teams that their offense, I thought at times, was their best defense.
Yeah, but they yes, agreed. But one of the hallmarks of that team was they could get, you know, 5 or 6 stops in a row. You know what I mean? When was the last time the Warriors, outside of like a team missing the same shot 5 times, getting an offensive rebound 5 times, and then finally hitting a 3, they never get multiple stops in a row down the stretch. Down the stretch. And so, yeah, this team also feels way more 3-ball reliant than those teams in the past. I mean, it just does. Maybe the numbers don't support that. It just feels like it's bombs away.
All right, let's, before we go to the Lions, because the Lions are jam-packed here, we're going to get to everybody in just a second. Hang tight. We'll get to KC and San Jose first. Here's Steph last night, captured by Anthony Slater, on what he wants to see Mike Dunleavy and company do before the deadline.
Mike understands, like, we want to win. We want to be in that position where we've always said that you want to be relevant in the championship type of chase. While, you know, we understand we're getting older and deeper into our careers and allowing some of the young guys to kind of blossom. But it doesn't mean you're getting desperate. It's better to kind of be patient, understand what that looks like. And I know, you know, Mike is always on the phone trying to figure it out. That's what a good GM does. Doesn't mean there's a deal on the table. Doesn't mean that you're desperate. Doesn't mean that you're just flinging, like I said, assets all the way around and being reckless with it.
All right, that's Steph. Should they be desperate?
Well, yeah, yes.
That's the star player basically giving the GM a vote of confidence saying, I know Mike is doing a good job, and I know Mike is on the phone all the time. And you know what? The Warriors are on default all the time. I think they proved over the offseason that they were big game hunting, but nothing was there. Nothing was there. And they were in a position where they said, we don't want to just make a deal just to make a deal. Let's keep some of these assets. But where are we at now as we head into the trade deadline, February 6th? Do you want to see the Warriors get desperate? Do you want to see them flip over the table and just trade assets? What do you want to see the Warriors do?
Well, okay, standing pat, why is that so appealing to you?
Well, it's not the most appealing thing to me. But
what is the,
I tell you what, what standing pat will do. So you got to scour the market. Who's out there realistically?
Okay.
Who's out there and for what price? Now I have all my picks for the foreseeable future, and you got Kuminga, you have Moody, you have some young assets here. Also, you have some contracts that will have less years on the deal. So if I go into summertime, if I don't trade anything, and you stand pat and you try to win 45 games or whatnot, and you try to make a push for the play and you don't win, that's not going to appease fans. I get all that. Trust me. I want to go to the playoffs too. I think I want to go to the playoffs more than anybody around here. I love playoff basketball, and I love seeing it in my market. But if you do wait until the summer, I think you may have more options and more teams willing to trade with. Now, do I know that a fact? No, I don't. I don't know what's going on behind the war room, say in Orlando, Charlotte, Houston, San Antonio. Who the hell knows what's going on with these teams? But I do believe, my gut tells me that there will be more options to make more maneuvers heading into next season in the summertime. Now, is it the worst thing in the world? No, I don't think so. Now, if they made a trade before the deadline, sure, whatever. What does it look like? But also, I'm realistic here saying that, hey, I'm still under the CBT. I'm not paying no luxury tax this season, and I could maybe think long-term saying, okay, in the summertime, maybe I can move X, Y, and Z before the draft to try to reload for next season. I don't think it's the worst thing in the world. I know the fans don't want to hear that, but it may not be the worst thing in the world to stand pat through the deadline if nothing's out there. Like, if Jimmy Butler's the only thing out there, do you really want to roll with Jimmy Butler?
Well, Zion's out there.
Don't know if they're going to trade
him. Well, no, it sounds like they've been trying to trade Ingram and Zion.
And what does it cost?
I mean, at this point, like, it can't be worse than what they've got going. You know, it just can't. I mean, I'm just looking at who's under contract for how long. The only two guys that are making significant money, they have this year's, whatever the remaining balance of this year is, and then next year, is Wiggins and Dre. That's who we're talking about. To me, 2 months of this year at Wiggins and Dre plus the full year of next year, I don't think in the offseason, now we're down to just a year. I don't think it like really boosts them.
No, it may not boost them, but it may boost their value to another team that says, okay, those 2 months of prorated money is done. I could get them on the last year of a deal, and they have those player options, which I know about. That may be more enticing to other teams. To other teams. That's all I'm saying. Let's go to KC in San Jose. KC, what's happening?
Hey, guys. So I think, Joe, you're thinking like a fan, right? You want a better product. I think the decision's already been made. And that is to just stay pat. And they want to get a draft pick this year because they can, to Bonte's point, dangle that in the offseason. If not, make a pick. Maybe you get lucky, you know, and you move up. Because there's no move to be made that's going to be so impactful that you're going to, maybe you get to the sixth seed. Okay, you have a seven-game series. Then what? You cannot take on all this bad money. They finally have started to get rid of, you know, like not being in cap space hell.
Yeah.
That's just how the league is set up. Trust me, I hate going to the game. And Bonte, by the way, I'm going to the game on Saturday. Would love to stop by and say hi.
Oh, please. Like, KC in San Jose. You come by me, I'm going to have you arrested, okay? No, I'm kidding. Please come by the gatehouse. I would love to meet you, KC, actually.
we'll do, man.
I'll introduce you to Bully as well. And tell him that you ripped me on the airwaves.
No, hey, actually, honestly, man, it's for Junior KC. Me and you are alike. I went to the same school as you. I've done some sports work. I just want Junior KC to experience you and Chris Mullen so he can, you know, he's only 11.
Hey, no, KC, honestly, KC, I would love to meet you. I would love to meet you and come by. Please come by.
All right, he's got practice till 3. I'll try to get there as early, and if not, we'll stay after. We'll figure out how to get in touch. I know it's a work day for you, so I don't want to, you know, get in your business.
I appreciate the consideration.
Let me ask you a question, since you're on the phone right now. This is a dead serious one. Would your son know the difference if they hollowed the team out and it was just Steph Curry? Would he really know the difference between, you know, Pat Spencer and Dennis Schroeder right now playing on the floor, would it make that big of a difference to him as a kid consuming it?
Joe, since he's my son, he absolutely will.
I love that.
Because I raised him like that.
I love that. Come on, Joe.
I don't know how many would.
Come on. These kids are smart. They know what's going on.
Dennis Schroeder.
They know what's going on. Dennis Schroeder.
Give me some Dennis Schroeder.
Can we discuss Dennis Schroeder for a second? Because it's been, 14 games. And I like the move in terms of, you move Melton, who wasn't going to play the rest of the season, the 3 second-round picks.
Yeah.
And you try to get an asset.
Okay.
And Dennis Schroeder was having a career season. But it was also like, boy, Steve Kerr said, hey, we're going to try to tinker our style and tailor our style towards Dennis Schroeder. When I'm thinking, boy, you had Jonathan Kuminga here. Can we tinker it maybe to JK, who's been here for 4 years?
He's not one of the chosen one.
Well, Dennis Schroeder, in the 14 games since he's been a member of the Golden State Warriors, it has not been pretty, folks. It has not been pretty. His point of attack defense has been solid. And I can't make it a cross-country move like that when you're a free agent. You're wearing number 71. He's accustomed wearing number 17. We're not pulling down number 17 from the Raptors.
No.
That's Chris Willis' number, buddy. I'm sorry to tell you. But Dennis Schroeder, that move has not worked out for the Golden State Warriors. It's been very underwhelming, and it looks a little CP3-ish, where at least CP3 could run the second unit. And I think we're getting to the point where it's like, you got to find a two-guard here, because Dennis Schroeder and his Steph Curry backcourt is just not working.
Well, it would be Pods if it wasn't Dennis, and Dennis has outplayed Pods this year. Which, we're not even talking about a high bar. I don't want to, but I'm just saying, like, it could be worse. I'm not even defending it. You're right. It's just, that's how down bad they are, B. Like, they're down bad.
They're down bad.
I know people don't want to hear this. The white flag, a.k.a. the tank, to me, it makes the most sense. My head and my heart, it makes the most sense. We're chasing fake money that's never going to pay off at the end. And I actually think that the smartest move is to just hollow this thing out a little. And yeah, you do run the risk of alienating Steph Curry. It sucks. I don't think you have many other choices.
The Warriors, in 14 games, Dennis Schroeder's been here for 14 games. Look at these numbers, man. 33.5% from the floor he's shooting. From the floor. 33.8% from the floor. 25.7% from three. 10 points.
Better than I thought.
4.5 assists. 77.8% from the free throw line.
Well, if TJD could finish, he might have a couple more. And they do have good rapport.
Bonte, really quick, as you read off those Schroeder numbers, I want to point out those are all massive drops from what he did when he was with Brooklyn. You said 33.8% from the field.
Yep.
He was 45% in Brooklyn, 25% from three at the Warriors, 38% when he was with Brooklyn. 10 points a game in 14 games with the Warriors. He was averaging 18.4 a game when he was in Brooklyn. Like, coming to the Warriors has, like, basically kind of derailed his season right now.
Oh, it has. It really has. Let's go to Dave in San Francisco. Dave, what's up?
Hey, what's up, y'all? Can y'all hear me?
We got you, Dave.
Hey, man. They're basically dead in the water. I honestly think you have to revisit Cam Johnson, and you have to go get Vucevic. If that means gut out the roster to go get them, do it.
I want to know what the lineup looks like.
Gotta hear this. I want to hear the trade.
I'll give it to you. I'll give it to you.
Okay, I'm right down.
All right. Kuminga, we've been waiting on him for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Cam Johnson is ready right now. You got to go Kuminga, Kyle Anderson, Buddy, GP2, and you throw in Looney. You get rid of five. You're gonna get Moody. Everybody's been wanting Moody. Get Moody in the starting lineup. Bring up Gui Santos Bring up Quinton Post, whatever. But you're gonna run a lineup with Steph, Moody, Cam, Wiggins, and Dre.
Can I ask a question? Did you watch last night?
Oh, I watched last night, and we have no spacing.
And do you think Moody, with more minutes in a starting role, is gonna play better than what he did last night? He's terrible.
Yes, because it actually showed when he actually gets minutes, he has a bad game. But then when he actually has multiple games that he actually plays really well, does he not?
No, he doesn't. That's why he's on the bench.
Oh, my gosh. Go look at his average when he averages 30 minutes. His plus minus is great.
You see what Kuminga averages 30 minutes a game? Dave?
I do. But if you put Cam Johnson in there who could space the floor, yeah, who could play defense, who's consistent, I'd rather give that up. I mean, we don't have nothing right now.
Well, spacing, I want to stay on the line, Dave. When you talk about spacing, and I think we all forget one of the most pivotal moments in the first-round series against Sacramento was when Draymond got suspended because it forced Steve Kerr to go to a one big lineup to create more spacing. When you have TJD and Draymond playing together, yes, they have good rapport defensively, but Dave, they cripple the spacing as much as anybody on this roster right now. Don't you agree?
Well, that's where I think like you have to move and get somebody like Vucevic as well.
So in this dream scenario where we get Vucevic and Cam Johnson, they're what, the 9 seed?
Oh, they're definitely not the 9 seed. You have enough firepower. You're getting two guys that's averaging 22 points, and they're going to get you rebounds. So defensively, you're going to get better, and offensively, you're going to get better. You're at least going to get to the 6th seed.
All right. Man, I want what you're sipping on this one.
No, I'm mad at you, Dave. It's all fair. Good call, man. Good call. He came with a plan, and he put it through the trade.
You think Cam Johnson and Vucevic, I'm just hypothetically, all of a sudden boosts you to the 6th seed?
It depends what other parts you have around him. Because I do like Cam Johnson as a 3-and-D guy, and I think Vucevic is shooting 44% from 3 and 55% from the floor, and he will space it. Now, defensively, you're going to give up something. But again, your offense is problematic. Your offense has been one of the worst in the league since December 1st. Their offense right now throughout the season is ranked 21st. So I do think Cam and Vucevic will spark the offense, but what does it look around them? What pieces are you moving to get these players? That's what I need to see. Let's go to Mike in Oakland. Mike, what's up?
Hey, you guys. Good morning.
Good morning, Mike.
I'm going to say that first before I get started. Man, the Warriors and Steve Kerr. I kind of blame Steve Kerr some on this one, man, because everybody's cold at the same time. But so when you got a plan A is not working, you go to plan B. And plan B is, okay, let's go in the game putting pressure on them right away. Let's go into a press, full-court press right away just to get them out of rhythm, just to get them out of sync so we can at least maybe get the juices flowing on our team now because we've been playing this tough D. Now maybe some of these shots will go in. The Warriors, they look so cold to me. They don't look like they're ready to play mentally and physically. And as far as trading anybody, don't trade nobody. Make those guys – get the most out of these guys. You're not getting – Steve Kerr is not getting the most out of the guys. He's not playing the right guys at the right time. Okay, so you try this experiment with Buddy. Get him out of there. He ain't doing it. Put Pat Spencer in there because he can run that point. He can get inside better than just about anybody on the team, him and Wiggins. Let them guys mix it up. Let them throw the ball out and kick it in. And I think if they start doing some of that, I also one more thing, I would like to see Trace Jackson and Looney in at the same time just for a different effect, just to make sure when the ball goes up, they get the rebound. And then we kick it out to these little guys and let them do it. Or you can vice versa, throw it inside to one of them and let them lay it up. Right. I'm just saying, but just do something different.
You just want to shake it up different. Shake it up, see different combinations. I understand you, Mike. Maybe you might see TJD and Looney together. Who the hell knows? You get your version of the Twin Towers out here in the Bay Area. By the way, Moses Moody, I'm not trying to come down Moses Moody Road. I like Moses Moody a lot. Mo Money, he's one of my favorite players. A really good dude. In the three starts he's had, he's averaged 11 points, shot 58% from the floor, 64% from three. But it's a very small sample size in 21 minutes a game. He's only started four games.
I will say this.
I think I would like to see it. I'm not saying it's changing the fortunes of the Golden State Warriors. But Moses Moody next to Stephen Curry, I think right now would be a lot better than Dennis Schroeder next to Stephen Curry and let Schroeder run a second unit with Buddy Hield and Jonathan Kuminga. Let Moody start next to Wiggins, so at least Moody's will be on the three-point line. Now, again, I don't know if it's going to change anything. I don't even know if Moses Moody's good. But we've seen Lindy Waters III start, and we've seen Buddy Hield start next to Steph. I'm over to Buddy Hield experiment in the starting lineup. He's a three-point specialist off the bench. Let him stay in his role. Why not see what Moses Moody has to offer in the starting lineup? Maybe he becomes a player. I have no idea. But it doesn't hurt to try, right? Doesn't hurt to try.
I mean, they've tried 20, how many different lineups?
22. 22 different starting lineups this year. Moses Moody's only started 4 games.
Look, we could keep reshuffling the deck chairs on the Titanic, but the Titanic's going down, dog.
Listen.
We're hitting the iceberg.
Look, I hear you. Go ahead.
No, as we talk about kind of like what moves we're making
the
here. Like,
right there. He raised his hand.
Well, yeah, I don't want to just jump like in and no, make like it all awkward and clunky.
Yeah.
But no, as we're talking about like what moves we want to see the Warriors make, like I look at it where it's like, we need to stop thinking about what moves they can make for them to win this year. What moves can they make that they can make this year that set them up more for next year? Like, remember in the lost season, the COVID season, they got Andrew Wiggins. Yeah. They didn't do anything that year, but it gave them time to kind of work him into the system, mm-hmm. work him into the building, work him into the culture. I think if you're talking about moves the Warriors make, that's the move you make right now. See how it fits, and then at the summer, you can kind of tinker from there. And yes, this is me trying to, again, work in the Zion Williams.
Yeah, I knew that's where you were going. And you know what? It's not a bad idea.
I'm open to
it. It's not a bad
it.
Idea. I'm open-minded to everything. I'm open-minded to anything.
Look, I don't even know if he'll play, but if you just said, if you woke up this morning and all of a sudden, Zion's a Warrior, all right, that's exciting. That's something to lean forward and watch, and there's some entertainment factor. If I just said, Steph and Zion, yeah. There's something there. Now, does he play?
Yeah.
You know, who are you trading for? Like, who's left? I don't know. I'm open-minded.
To Lovett's point, that could be a move that sparks the future for the Golden State Warriors. It could be a move, but Zion's got to figure things out.
Can Zion and Kuminga play together, think?
Who?
I said, do you think there's any, just if it didn't cost you him, do you think Zion and Kuminga could play alongside each other? Because they bring a lot of the same stuff to the table. I'm just curious. Obviously, Zion is a more accomplished player at a
I would like to see it. I would like to see them try to make it work, to be honest with you. I'd like to see them try to make it work. Now, with Zion Williams, you're going to need a rim protector.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah.
And so, can you play Kuminga at the three? We've been discussing that all season long. So, but I like Lovett's mind. I like your point about maybe moving on to the future and seeing whether or not you could find somebody that could maybe take you into the future. A guy like Zion and maybe kick the tires on that. You may have to do that. And you know what? How about if you're going to go all in with the Zion Williamson aspect of everything, because it may cost you a pretty penny, why not just bring in Brandon Ingram as well?
That was
and
my
he's
next
going
question.
To be a free agent after the season. And so then you kick the tires on Brandon Ingram, Zion Williamson, and Steph Curry. You could decide what to do. Maybe, and then that gives you an asset to sign a trade, maybe, if you don't like the Brandon Ingram fit. So you have options.
And that's costing
here.
You Draymond and Wiggins and Kuminga.
Who knows what it's costing you? Are people ready for that? Are people ready to turn it over? It's just shake it up and just blow this thing up. Let's go to Marvin in the city. Marvin, what's happening?
Hi, guys. Well, all I can say is after watching NBA since 1960, I've never seen a coach like this guy, and I've never seen a team that needed to change coaches more than the Warriors do now. Everybody's talking about players. I see him leaving players to continue to play when they're making turnovers at crunch time. I saw Don Nelson sit guys for a week when they made a bad turnover and it cost the Warriors a game. So to me, it's all about the fact that every assistant who's ever taken over the Warriors from Steve Kerr has a better win-loss record than he does, and you can look that one up. How did the Sacramento Kings solve their problem with their coach of the year? They fired him. They got another guy. They won 8 in a row. We were 12-3 when we had De'Anthony Melton. They've been trying to replace
Anthony
Melton since he
Marvin, he only played six games. He only played six games.
That's 12
plus 3 equals 15. He only played six games.
He played in the preseason, too. I'm just saying that. The motion they had, his defense, they got turnovers. He was like a big GP2. But the fact is, how did the Sacramento Kings solve their problem with Mike Brown? They got rid of him. He had won 8 in a row with Max Christie. In 2000, the Marlins were the worst team in baseball.
Jimmy
All they
Leland.
Did was change the manager, and they won the World Series. So this team needs a new spirit, and they're not going to get it from a guy who leaves players to continue to make turnovers. He will sit Moses Moody for 2 weeks, but he will not sit guys that are making the mistakes that are costing them games and missing free throws. How many free throws are these guys that are missing free throws forced to shoot every day of practice? They should be in there doing 1,000 free throws.
Well, did you ever hear Shaq talk about this? Good call. We heard Shaq talk about this. Like, Shaq would hit 100 free throws in a row in practice, and then the game would come and couldn't hit anything.
It happens. Let's go to let's get to Samita and Los Gatos. Then we'll get to Leroy and Brett and Bay Bridge. Samita, don't forget, Dalton Johnson coming up at 9:20. Johnson, 9:20.
Not to get too
sad. He said get rid of Curry.
No. He said something like every assistant has left the Warriors and has a better winning record than...
I just let that fly.
That can't be factually correct.
No, because Luke Walton's been fired twice. Mike Brown's been fired.
Alvin Gentry's been fired.
So, like, let's... Exactly. Kenny Atkinson's had the best... Kenny Atkinson's off to a great start.
No question. But he inherited a really good team.
Right. Well, let's... Willie Green in New Orleans, how's his record?
I even forgot about that.
I mean, come on.
I totally forgot it. But nobody said it, and I just kind of nodded. You know, and I was thinking, that can't be true.
Well, it's like the guy the other day who came at me and told me that Moses Moody flipped the Boston game because he started. He played 13 minutes in that game. 13 minutes. Like, you know what I'm saying? What the hell are we doing around here? Samita Los Gatos.
Hi, Samita.
What's up, Samita?
Hey, guys. You know, I could not resist calling in today because of what's been going on with this team. Shafi, I think I agree with you. I think it's time to either make a huge move or just write off the season, because the way things are now, we are not even making the play-in. Like, it's not looking good at all. And I don't know why a team that was started off 12-3, you know, we had such high hopes. You know, I remember thinking to myself, this is what the Warriors do, right? They get these guys that, you know, other teams kind of overlook, and we don't have that many big names on the team, but everybody's working together well. We're 12-3. Turns out that was kind of a fluke, because it's just been downhill ever since. I think, and again, I, if it was me, I would say get rid of everybody. Just get rid of everybody, start over, go back to the drawing board. I mean, you can't say put including Steph, because he's too much of a key part of this team for non-basketball reasons. But I think everybody's got to be up for reconsideration in their role here, from the coaching staff onwards.
Samita, let me ask you this one. You have a lot of perspective on this. I was a Depression-era Warrior fan. They gave me the greatest 10 years of basketball that I never thought I would ever see. Not any one of the individual seasons of the 10 was something that I could see in my lifetime. And so I kind of think, like, they've earned the benefit of the doubt. Like, if they make a big, massive trade, I'm riding with it. If they decide to tank, I'm riding with it. Like, they've earned my trust. And, yeah, maybe it doesn't work out no matter what direction they choose, because that's how sports works. But I feel like I'll ride. Just make a decision. I'll ride with it.
I agree. Make a decision. Like, do something.
Samita, if they already made a decision?
Yeah.
What if they already made a decision, and their decision was to stand pat?
Ugh.
How would you feel about that?
Well, I think I'd be pretty disappointed, because I don't see, you know, and talk about, you know, championship, heart of a champion, and, you know, championship mindset. Is anybody seeing any of that on the floor?
No.
From anybody?
No.
Right? It's where is it? You know, and I think part of the pressure that the fans put on the team, and I don't know if this affects the decision making at all. I'm guessing it doesn't. But from where I'm sitting, I see a lot of, and this is what happened with Clay too, I see a lot of emotional attachment to players who are not producing.
Yeah.
I mean, we have a soft spot for GP2. We have a soft spot for, you know, Pods. We have a soft spot for Moody, you know, play Moody. Remember that whole thing? Like, okay, great. I see that we're emotionally attached to some of these guys, but what's it doing for us?
I totally agree.
Maybe emotionally attached to the wrong guys.
Time for the legal.
As you're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ, FM, and HD1 San Francisco, Odyssey Sports Station, always live on the free Odyssey app. From the All-Star Game on, Klay Thompson did produce. I know it's hard to hear that, and it sounds like I'm a Klay fan, a cheerleader or whatnot, but the facts are the facts. The guy did produce what a lot of people didn't think he would produce. Right now, we could use that production from Klay Thompson. We really could, but I want to play this Steph cut.
Be serious here. I want your opinion. Do you really think that if Klay had stayed...
No, it has nothing to do with it.
I'm asking. Would they be a better team? Just forget
Probably not, but they would at least have a buck. He's never shot 30% in a month for the three-point line. Like, Buddy Hield has shot 30% from three since December 1st. Klay's worst month last season, he shot 35% from three. But, and we thought it was like, oh my God, the sky has fallen. And then from the All-Star break on, the guy shot 43% from the three-point line. Everybody said, get rid of this guy. So I just think the spacing would look a little better.
Okay.
The offense would function a little bit better. That's all I'm saying. How much better are they?
You think
they'd
be incrementally better. That's what you think. That's fine.
Maybe, but the moves would be different. You wouldn't have Buddy. You maybe wouldn't have Kyle Anderson. You may have another player. So it's hard to say whether or not they would look better. I believe the organization and Klay Thompson need to move on from each other.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying.
No,
they need to move on from each other.
I got that feeling,
too. But when people say Klay didn't produce, just look at numbers and watch the games. The guy started to produce. He produced so well, when everybody wanted him to come off the bench, he played. Whoever replaced him in the starting lineup, guess what? Klay had to go back in the starting lineup for that player. He had to, because they weren't getting the same production. So that's all I'm saying here. Steph Curry on this quote last night, under responsibility to keep the team in a good place.
Desperate trades or desperate, you know, moves that deplete the future. Like, there is a responsibility allowing the, or keeping the franchise in a good space and good spot when it comes to where we leave this thing when we're done. It doesn't mean that you're not trying to get better. It doesn't mean that you're not active in any type of search to, you know, if you have an opportunity where a trade makes sense, or even in the summer free agency makes sense, like, you want to continue to get better. Nobody wants to be stale or be in a situation where you're passing up opportunities, but it doesn't mean that you're desperate, you know, just flinging assets all around the place just because you want to do something.
So that's Stephen Curry. You just don't want to get desperate to do something. Then Draymond Green in the story with Vincent Goodwill, he mentioned that you have to continue to build. And for us, that will always be the focus. It'll never be something's going wrong. Make the dumbest move you can make. We're not that organization. He later added a story, when I'm done, when Steph is done, I want us to come back. When Steve's done, I want us to come back, sit on the court and talk so much bleep to everybody, because our organization, our team, is that good. So it sounds like, and even Steve Kerr yesterday, or Steve Kerr to Anthony Slater in his story, maybe they are going to stand pat. Maybe they've come to grips that, you know what, we're not that team anymore.
Well, it's funny that Draymond would say that, like, I want to leave it in a better place. At the expense of you? Like, no, I'm serious. My follow-up to Draymond would have been, all right, well, if we all think that Kuminga should play the four and you should take a backseat, are you ready for that?
Maybe. He said he was.
Yeah, he said he was. Your actions don't speak that.
He said he was.
When all preseason, you're like, no, I see him as a three.
He said he was. Steve Kerr, Anthony Slater yesterday, that's the hard part of addressing all this stuff. We're not giving in, but you have to be realistic organizationally about where you are. And you have to mind what's coming ahead in the future. I probably won't be around, but I would tell you, if this organization gave away the next six or seven drafts for a wild swing, that would be the most irresponsible thing that they could do. 888-957-9570. Do you agree with that quote from Steve Kerr, as he told our 95.7 The Game insider Anthony Slater, who will join us tomorrow on the Warriors Wednesday ahead of their game against the Minnesota Timberwolves? By the way, don't forget, 95.7 The Game Knockout Tournament is back. I'll have details on the other side. 95.7 The Game Knockout Tournament is back again. Details on the other side. And that will be brought to you by the San Francisco International Airport.